So, I like the fact that John has such a wide open topic today, let go and let God, let go and letting God. And again, hopefully, particularly for the people who raise their hands as new, hopefully we got some things that'll disturb where it is that where I'm currently sitting in my recovery. We do a couple of things in the rooms all the time. Most of the people that's been around know it. And the two things we really do that is we comfort and we disturb. We comfort the disturbed and we disturb the comfortable. And that's what we do. One of our main charges. And so this idea of and we just got a taste this morning of this letting go and letting God idea that starts in that third step. And that third step is a decision to submit to the rest of the process. You know, the third step, is that's pretty much what it is. It's just a decision to get in the game. And it's the game that's going to turn over my will and my life, the rest of that process. When I get off my knees in the third step, so pardon there, because you might be one of the people who've heard it out of your mouth or heard it out of some other people's mouths. I keep turning it over and I take it back. I turn it over and I take it back. And immediately upon getting off my knees, you know, what's instructive is, you know, this decision I made in the third step can have little permanent effect unless it once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in me that's blocking me from this power. I don't have to know. Sometimes people will make it sound like I already need to be in communion with this power when I get on the third step. Sometimes people will make it sound like I already need to know God to go to the not a requirement at all. You know, still the way I am, just go. You know. What is scary? What if I get the wrong kind? You know, I have a friend, but he says, you know, don't worry about making that decision and don't worry about choosing a concept. It's going to be wrong. And that's confident. There it is. It's going to be wrong. But it's going to be right. It's going to be incomplete. It's going to evolve and it's going to change. I still consider myself, I'm not totally, because I remember sometimes, you know, in an effort to really be self-effacing and I'm just a common, ordinary, everyday guy, you'll hear a lot of speakers who've been at this as long as I have, and they'll say stuff like, I'm still not that spiritual, or if you catch me at the wrong time, and if I'm new, where's the hope in that? Where's the hope in, you've been doing this 31 years, dude, and you still the same guy? No. The reality is, I still stumble, and I still make mistakes. But the truth of the matter is, I'm not scared. So when I get into this third step, it ain't about now I'm gonna come out and I'm gonna have this real floaty experience, don't do nothing wrong, decision to turn my will and my life over, turned over life looks like it's really good. No, sometimes I'm graceless. Sometimes I fall. I'm a falling down guy. I'm kind of a messy guy sometimes. Because I'm an in-life guy, and I'm not scared. So I like the edge. I like doing stuff. I like, you know, my brother, sometimes people be like, you know, I'm looking for peace. And I'm looking for peace, but I'm me. I'm not scared. You know, with a power, that's the biggest thing that a power allows. It doesn't talk about, you hear people talk about the road getting narrow. That's true in a lot of ways. But what the book talks about is join us on the broad highway. And the thing about walking hand in hand with a power, there's a lot of room. There's a lot of room. It's a broad umbrella. Grace is a broad umbrella. It's a real broad umbrella. You know, and the thing about grace and the thing about God, I started talking about it earlier when I talked about how it pisses me off to hear people say, and when I say pisses me off, that means I'm taking it personal. I probably should back up off that. But it really, It irritates me when people talk about the chosen few. You know, I don't believe that God chooses any differently. I believe grace is great. God does one thing, you know, and that's just, he just keeps God. He just keeps God. That's what he does. He keeps, you know, that's what God does. You know, I had an old timer tell me, God gave you something, because I was going to a meeting and he saw me. Ralph, what's up with you? I said, oh, I'm just doing God's work. He said, what you think you can do for God, God can't do for himself. I was like, whoa. I'm like, wait. I thought that was the right answer, because I'm the right answer guy, right? You know. But the thing about being trained well in Alcoholics Anonymous, and this is also part of being trained well in my life, I've always had a respect for elders. And I have a respect for elders in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not one of the people that will see old timers. He ain't never worked a step in it. I still am respectful that you kept the doors open for me. There's something in it for me. There's something in it for me to not get in that kind of self-righteousness and that kind of thing. And I've done that enough with my grandfather. So I don't care. I don't judge that. I don't go there. I have a healthy respect for elders. And so because this guy was one of the elders there, I just, okay, you know, tell me. You know, so what am I supposed to be doing? You know, if I'm not supposed to be, he said, check this out. Your job is to do for God's kids. God's job is to do for you. Your job is to do for God's kids. He said, God gave you something he didn't even keep for himself. I said, wait a minute. He gave me something he didn't keep for himself? He gave you the choice over whether or not you're going to return his love. God don't have no choice. God is love. I was like, wow. Wow. So grace is available. Grace flows any and everybody. Then what's the difference with me and the person that's still out there? What's the difference between me, October 11th, and me, October 10th, 1986? I believe when desperation meets opportunity, there's a very thin window that opens up. Because it's grimy. My window is grimy. It's filthy. It's caked with, you know, with what it talks about in We Agnostics. It's caked with pomp and worship or other things and calamity and all that. It's blocked. But a really thin window opened up on October 11th, 1986 of grace. And I jumped through the window. And ever since that time, my job is clearing the channel. It ain't the grace is blocked. The receptor. The receiver is blocked. The sender is sending. Grace is coming. I'm blocked. Whole rest of this deal, this 12-step process, clear channel. Clear channel. That's the deal. Clear the channel for grace to flow. And this vessel that it flows through, my sponsor always talks about, if you're going to be of help to somebody, always remember, you're the pipe, you're not the well. You're the pipe, you're not the well. And so this deal about, that's why we always talk about giving it away. If I was just a receptacle and all I was doing is getting it and overflowing, no, I would not have room for it to keep. It flows through me. Not to me, through me. That's what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. Grace ain't just flowing to us, through us. That's it. That's the deal. That's keeping the channel. It's through us. Now sometimes I want to hold mine. I want to hold mine. And then through us. So this deal about so clear channel. So I get up off Dundee's and I start clearing the channel. We call that inventory, new friends. You know, and I give legs to that decision I took in the third step. I need to give it legs. I need to make it come alive. So clear channel. Made a decision to turn my will and my life. Okay, so now how am I going to give that decision some legs? How am I going to make it alive? How am I going to do something about that decision that I made in the third step? So now it's an effort to face and be rid of the things in me that block me. And so from that point on, this idea of letting go and letting God, that's the process of letting go and letting God. It is a process. And so we have that first piece, you know, which is, okay, why do I do it? Steps 1, 2, and 3. Being convinced in my life, on my will can hardly be a success. And then I start doing that process of 4 through 9.
how do I let go and how do I let God? That's how I give legs to that decision to let go and let God. I start doing those inventories. I do a resentment inventory. You know, selfishness and self-centeredness, and, you know, resentment, the number one offender. I do a resentment inventory. I do a fear inventory, and then I do a sex conduct inventory. You know, and I do those inventories. And a lot of times, I've done a lot of inventories. I'm in a big book workshop. That big book workshop we started at my mom's house back in November of 1987. We celebrated 30 years November of last year. You know, we're still going. Tomorrow morning, it'll be about 250 people. We got off our knees 2 weeks ago as a group on the Thursday of prayer. Tomorrow morning, we'll start writing. And because I'm a member of the group, every time when we get to a prayer in the book, we pray together. When we get to an assignment, when it comes time to write, we write. We don't just write at the workshop, and we don't share a fit at the work, but we write, and we'll be writing, start writing tomorrow. And because I've been in that workshop, I've written a lot of inventories in my 31 years. I've written at least 16, 18 inventories. I don't say that's what you need to do. It's what I've done. I do it because I'm a member, and that whenever we get there, I write. And my sponsors, and a lot of times you can get caught up in the mechanics. And my sponsor always talks about, you don't treat a spiritual disease through mechanical means. Don't get hung up on the mechanics. You know, I'm a mechanical guy because I believe in training my feet. I believe there's power in repetition. I didn't get to be an alcoholic, and you know, and my whole drug, I didn't get to be doing that overnight. I did it by repetition. And I do the same thing in recovery. Repetition. I'm not one of these people that's not the. I'm still big on going to meetings. Number one, I'm big on the 12 step. And if you're big on the 12 step, you know, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message. You know, the best place to carry it. If the best place to go fishing is where it's fish. You know, folk beating, you know, I've been doing this long enough, now I don't have, yeah, okay. You know, nothing ensures immunity from drinking. Practical experience shows nothing ensures immunity from drinking, you know, so much as, or in, you know, work with another alcoholic. Okay. So if nothing ensures immunity from drinking, when we hear immunity these days, particularly in a medical context, there's one disease that we really think about that affects the immune system, right? You know, and that's AIDS. So if I'm not working with somebody else, shit, I'm walking around with spiritual AIDS. You know, I need to be working with somebody else. So the best place to do that, you know, the best place to do that is meetings. You know, I'm still big on meetings. I'm big on meetings because I don't even know what a meeting's going to give me. I don't even know. Sometime I'll go and run into somebody, you know, Les called me a couple of weeks ago, and just, she gets jazzed when it's somebody new that walks up there. And it jazzes me when she gets jazzed about somebody new. And when you've been doing this, you won't know it. New friends, you don't know this yet. You don't know this yet. But holler at some of the people that's been doing it. You know, holler at John, holler at Terry, holler at Terry. You know, holler at some of the people in here that's been doing it. There's nothing like seeing the lights come on for somebody. It is not, it's a high, it's nothing like it. If you're really about this thing, you know, it's nothing like it. You know, so this 4 through 9 process is the process of turning my will and my life over to, you know, that letting go and letting God. That process right there. So I do the inventories, and then I share it with somebody else. Something that people like us, that's an odd thing. You don't tell your business where I come from. Don't be telling your business. Some people, even apart from the life, family, you don't let stuff go outside of this house. You don't be discussing our business. You don't be telling your business. And what we do in the rooms, you know, we turn that around. Common sense becomes uncommon sense. I had to let go of old ideas, absolutely. An old idea of mine was you don't tell nobody nothing. You don't let, no, we say you as sick as your secrets. And so in that fifth step, we share with somebody else. The best way to do a fifth, the best way to be qualified to listen to a fifth step is they've done a fifth step. That's what most qualifies a person to listen to a fifth, to have done a fifth. Most folk, when they do a fifth step in these rooms, well, most of us do a mini fifth when we listen to, especially if it's from somebody who's never done a fifth step before. We know the nervousness. We know what that is an awesome, awesome honor. to have somebody sit down and listen to a fifth step. Here's the thing, when you do your fifth step, unintended consequence. Unintended consequences happen sometimes. Unintended consequence of the fifth. I knew, and there are some promises in there, and it'll talk about, you know, we'll have the feeling that the drink problem is, that, you know, it's gone. And so it's some big promises in there, but there is an unintended consequence that's not one of the promises of doing a fifth step. I really feel like I'm in. It's fourth and fifth is the first tangible evidence that I'm committed to this thing. Because I'm a guy, I'm a starter. I'll say I'm going to do something. You know, I want to start a business. I want to start this. I want to start, I'll say it and I'm good at it, but then I don't have a tangible evidence that I'm in. When I do a fourth and fifth step, it's the first tangible evidence that I'm in this goddamn thing for real. I'm in it for real. Because now I can't wait to go to a meeting where inventory is the topic. You know. I've gone to meetings before and shared on the fourth and fifth. Hadn't done one, but shit, that ain't never stopped me from sharing. You know. I'll never let a little detail like that get in the way. You know. I remember I was about 6 months sober. Do you ever get retroactively embarrassed in AA? You know, new friends, you'll get your turn. All the veterans get in. All the veterans know. I jumped up at a podium and the topic was step 11. I'm about 5 months, 6 months. I did that out of order. I pray all the time. I ain't knowing nothing about what step 11 is. I see the word. I see keywords, and that allowed me to share. I just pick them out. Praying, you know. I've been praying since the time I just went on and spewed my little thing. I get embarrassed now. I just want to do like this, you know, like thinking about when I shared that day, you know. But when you do a fourth and a fifth for real, you can't wait to go to it. Because you saw people. And here's the other thing. If you like me, if it ain't my experience, a lot of times I think you're lying about it being yours. I know I'm the only person like that. But I was thinking, it's a lot. Yeah, people in here are saying they ain't drink. I know for real. I want somebody to tell me the real secret. You know that, yeah, you hit a joint every now and then. And, you know, it's just not polite to say it in a meeting, you know. And I wanted to see. And yeah, they say these stuff, but ain't nobody really doing all that. And when you do a fourth and fifth for you, it comes home. Because you did it. And you know you. You know you fragile. You know you fallible. You know you said, you know you just. And now it gets real clear. They're doing the damn thing. People are really doing this thing. Unintended consequence, at least for me. You know, a fourth and a fifth step. You know, one year I sat on a fourth step, which is the craziest thing in the world, you know, to sit on a fourth step. That is utterly ridiculous. Doing a fourth step and not taking a fifth is like having sex and not coming. What, you know? Why are you going to do all that work and not get the benefit? So don't sit and, you know, it is. It's really just like, who is some people that want to be like, oh, I'm all right. It's like, yeah, it is. It really is. You know, sponsor, I'm helping y'all. You know. And so then coming out of that fifth step, I digest some big chunks of truth about myself. And I see some things that are glaring, and we take it to the sixth and the seventh step. You know, and in that sixth and seventh step, that's another surrender. That's a deeper surrender. Because, you know, I can't work on myself. I hear a lot of people talk about working on their defects of character, working on their defects of character. And I do be working on them. I'm polishing them up, you know. And working on my defects. And the way that I'm going to get there is I'm not going to get rid of defects by not doing them. I'm going to have to keep acting them out. Just the same way as I was drinking and using. I had to do it till I was surrendered. I don't surrender. I get surrendered by whatever it is that's going on. I didn't surrender to drugs, and they surrendered me. I didn't just make a decision. You know, I give. No, that's, you know, my friend Strange always say, you know, getting loaded, you know, it's like having sex with a gorilla. You ain't through till a gorilla is through. You know. And the way I was getting down at the end, it was like having sex with a gorilla on steroids, you know, on Viagra. You know, the gorilla, I was like, damn, gorilla, smoke a cigarette, do something. You know, the gorilla is just, whoo. Gorilla was having his way with your boy, tossing me, turning, you know. So I was surrendered. And sometimes your defects of character going to have to be like that. Toss you, turn you, go one more time, land. Sponsor, I don't know. I made a left turn again when I was supposed to go. So, okay, I know. I just, you know. And you, when we hear something defective, when you hear something defective, right? What's one of the things we associate when you say something is defects and it's defective in its workmanship? You'll hear it about cars, right? And when there's a defect in a whole model, what do? Recall it where? Right. Why? Because the car don't work on itself. 6 and 7. Recall the manufacturer. Car don't work on itself. 6 and 7. Recall to the manufacturer. Car don't work on itself. So I go back to the manufacturer, and that's a lifetime deal for a guy like me. You know, and in the 7th step, when we get on our knees and we say that prayer, it's an interesting prayer because it talks about remove every single defect of character that stands in the way of my usefulness. You mean there are some defects that are useful to me? Here's what I believe about that. There is no way that I will ever be defectless. To be defectless makes me God. I'm human. Defects are part of what I am. It's part of my strength. You know, it's part of my strength. Embrace the fact that I'm defective, but don't necessarily accept unacceptable behavior from me. But embrace that. Don't run from that fact. Don't get all discouraged about it. Don't get depressed about it. I'm not a perfect person. No, I'm not. And some of that is what makes me useful. It's what makes me valuable. It's what gives me, but you know, so I, and I used to look at that differently. I think now that my experience, not what I think. My experience, I have not had any defect permanently removed from me permanently. And there are times when it seems like one is gone. And then there are times it pops up because it's got some usefulness. You know, one of my biggest defect, what I think people think about me, there are places where it's very useful because I'm so wed to that idea that when it's time for me to do something, I don't always do it right because it's the right thing. I don't always do it right because it's virtuous. I don't always do it right because a person should do a good job and I have a strong work ethic. I sometimes do it right because I don't want them talking shit about it. I don't want to look bad. I don't want to look bad. I don't want to look bad. I took off on a kid to work for me really bad, really, really foul at work. I mean, use some profanity at him. And then he was like ready to try to clean it up and get back. And he like some time had passed. He sat up ahead of me and he turned around. Ralph, come in. And I told you I don't want to say nothing else about it. That's it. And I used some other words. That's it. That was a Wednesday. And then on Thursday, I was sitting in my office thinking, I got to go speak in San Diego tomorrow night. The way you are, you don't know what comes out of your mouth. And usually what comes out of your mouth is what's going on this current. I don't mind talking about what's current, but I want to have a happy ending. And that defect, I got to go talk in San Diego. And I might talk about how I took off on this kid. A defect showed up, but I don't have a... And then I did what we're supposed to promptly do in the 10th step, right? So I'm sitting here stewing on it. And I mean, that was such a huge motivation for me. John, let me holler at you. You know, and I talked to him. I said, John, you know, the way I talked to you yesterday was unacceptable. You know, and it should not have happened in this workplace. It should not have happened anywhere else. I was disrespectful and I was out of line. And he was, because he respected me. And I'm like, oh, no, it ain't cool. And it won't happen again. It shouldn't have happened then, you know, and it won't happen again. It was unprofessional. It was disrespectful to you as a man. you know, I sincerely apologize, you know, and ask him, is there something, anything you need to tell me for how I can make this thing right? And I did the whole thing that we do. Didn't even come up in San Diego. I didn't even think about it. But my point is, you know, I need every bit of what you guys give me for me to get some get right in me. When the doctor in the doctor's opinion said we knew what it is that he needed, we couldn't get it. The doctor said he needed some form of moral psychology. The doctor was always talking in scientific words. And what the doctor was saying, we know what the alcoholic needs. He needs some kind of get right, act right, but we can't put that get right, act right in him, you know. And we don't know a way to put get right, act right in him, you know. And that's got to come from a power bigger than him, you know. And I need all the help I can get from you guys to get right and act right, you know. So I do better with you. I do better when I'm with you. And my defects of character, sometimes, when that one happened, it was real clear to me in step 7 why that line was in there, you know, except when it stands in the way of my usefulness. That defect is what got me off my ass. And guess what? It didn't matter to John Chern what got me off my ass. What mattered to him was a man came to him and made this thing as right as he could. And the fact, and that's, so I don't care what the motivation is for me to do the right thing. Do the right thing. Do the, and I need everything we have. You know, I know, you know, John then brought me out of here. Ooh, this guy should be a spiritual. No, I'm a guy. I'm a falling down guy. You know, but I'm a guy that wants better. Not better than you. I'm a guy that wants to be better than I am. I'm a guy that wants to be better than the guy that came up in here. I'm a guy that wants to leave my fellowship better than the way I found it. You know, and I'm really committed to that. I'm committed to it even when it don't look like it. And since I'm committed to it even when it don't look like it, guess what? I believe sometime other folk are committed to it even when it don't look like it to me. And I'm real quick to be harsh on other people. Really judgmental. And our rule, you know, is to always be hard on ourselves and to be considerate of others. I really got to keep that rule in front of me. Because I want you to give me grace and I want you to give me mercy because I know I need it all the time. But I'm real quick to sit in the seat of judgment. So, you know, so 6 and 7, 8 and 9. And then we talk about, I just touched on, okay, when I let go and when I let God, how do I stay let go and how do I stay letting God? And that's 10, 11, and 12. You know, because I'm going to continue. Just because I did the first 9 steps, it's not going to make me pure snow and I'm never going to do anything. In fact, I'm going to be Ralph. Having done those 9 steps, I'm going to have had a spiritual awakening. You know, I'm going to have done some things. And by now, sanity is returned. You know, but guess what? Guess what? This ego reducing exercise. Guess what happened when the ego reduction? Ego will do what? It's like a toilet bowl. What happens when you flush a toilet bowl? Does the water stay down? What does the water do? Slow in the bowl, the water slowly comes back up. That's the same thing with me. You know, I do for 1 through 9. Flush. 10th step. Because that ego reveals. That ego reveals. Flush. 10th step. So now I continue this way of life. Because it's a way of life. It's a way of life, new friends, that I've developed. This way of life consists of me being convinced that I am no longer a cucumber. I'm a pickle. That's that. That one, I got to stay convinced of. I cannot. The idea that somehow, someday, he will be able to control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. You know, but in the 10-step promises, I love that they read that last night. The 10-step promises talked about, you know, if tempted, we'll recoil as if from a hot flame. I remember for the longest time, I used to say, if I could get loaded with no consequences, I would get loaded. And be new when you're new. Don't try to be where somebody else is. That might be where you are right now. I was like that for the longest. In fact, I didn't know when I wasn't like that until one day I realized, just like it says in the book, he wouldn't drink seemingly even if he could. You know, I didn't realize when that had happened for me. Somewhere I crossed, just like I crossed over into the, you know, into alcoholism without realizing it. I entered the region from which it's no return through human. Somehow I entered this other region without realizing it. I don't know when I went from a guy that I always want my head bad to I don't even want that. I don't even want it. And it says it seemingly this, it says it just comes. Ooh, that's a hell of a problem. It just comes. Not fighting it, not waking up. I'm not going to get loaded today. I'm not going to get loaded. I know for some new people, you're thinking, is that going to ever happen? Is it ever going to be that? You know, I hear people say it's hard being, and I don't, that ain't my experience, so I can't speak on it. And I'm not going to try to diminish it being your experience. I had a friend at home, Antonio, used to call that white duckling sobriety. I don't know nothing about it being hard because it ain't my job to keep me sober. The taste is out of my mouth. And since the taste is out of my mouth, which I didn't do, I didn't take it out. I don't wake up thinking, ooh, I can't get loaded. I think a lot of other stuff that makes life feel hard. Life feel hard sometimes. Damn, this money thing, you know. No, I mean, you know, life feels hard sometimes. And don't be tripping off that. You know, that's temporary stuff. You know, God is, you know. Oh, yeah, you saying that because you all right today. Yeah, I'd have been in those days where it was just not even check to check. It wasn't even a check to come. But looking back, another one of those promises we found that the things that happen when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything. I don't even know how to tell you. I can't tell you how I made it from 2010 to 2012. I was doing real estate. I didn't have one single deal. Didn't see a check. Can't tell you. This fellowship carried me. You know, but looking back, I find the things that happen when I put myself in God's hands. So I don't even, you know, I don't even be tripping. Somebody in here is in a dark place thinking money. When, you know, we ain't even, we ain't broke. We just in between money right now. Don't trip off that. Don't even be tripping. You know, that stuff is coming. Money come and go, all kind of stuff. But I'm useful. I live a life of usefulness, you know. And so that 10, 11, and 12, continue to watch, you know, and I continue to watch because that's the way I live my life now. For selfishness and dishonesty, resentment, and fear. I watch for them. I see them when they come up. I saw them when they came up with that kid job. You know, when they do, we do a couple of things. You know, I go to God. You know, I ask. Okay. You know, I make amends promptly. I discuss it with somebody else. And then I turn my attention to somebody I could help. Everything, every time there is a prescription in the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous, it is always followed by, we turn our attention to somebody we could help. If sex is particularly troublesome, we turn our attention to somebody. It always say that. You know, in order, you know, for if the alcoholic fails to enlarge and perfect his spiritual life through self-sacrifice and working with others, self-sacrifice, where he would not be able to survive the certain trials and low spots. I'm here as a witness. I'm here as a witness. Looking back, you know, I got through those certain trials and low spots because I had always worked with others and, you know, self-sacrifice working with others and part of that lifestyle, I continue to talk and I continue to listen. Prayer and meditation, 10 and 11, you know, and having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we start working with other people, you know, and that's our 12th suggestion. And that is hopefully we had a little glimpse of letting go and letting God and how it looks in my experience. I'm going to take some questions right here. When fear of failed relationships is overcoming my life. Okay, and this has a question mark after. When fear of failed relationships is overcoming my life. Okay, when fear or failure, and I guess I'm going to make an assumption because I don't want to short anybody. I'm assuming the first part of this says, what do you do when fear? I'm just going to take literary license. What do you do when fear or failed relationship is overcoming my life?
when fear of failed relationship is overcome. See, that's an interesting thing. I can tell you what to do when reality of failed relationship. How many folk in here have had failed relationships? Okay. How many folk in here are still living, breathing, standing, walking, talking? Okay, so here's the deal. Mr. or Mrs. Fear of Failed Relationships overcome in my life. And I'm not making light of it. So that little exercise right there tells me this. Take out the fear of it. Because I'm fearing something in my house. Okay, what if it happened? Okay. Whole room full of people that it happened to. I probably imagine the person that writes the question already happened to you too. Ain't my first rodeo. Fear of something always is greater than the reality of it. What we do with fear, we put them on paper. We ask ourselves, why do we have a fear? I don't like that when Bill wrote that because he filled in the answer for that. He said, we ask ourselves, why did we have a fear? And then he said, wasn't it because self-reliance? Wait. You didn't give me a chance, and that wasn't gonna be my answer. And he's just saying like we supposed to just agree. Wasn't it because self-reliance? Huh? Self-reliance. And then I thought about it. Okay, Bill, give me a chance to get with you on that. He said, isn't it because self-reliance failed us? What do I do with fear of failed relationships overcoming my life? Okay. That's critical right there when it's overcoming my life. Because when I let the fear of anything overcome my life, I'm outside of the umbrella. I don't care what goes on in my life. But see, now I'm talking about things I know. This is the reason why we get together and why we come together. I'm not speculating. Some of the stuff was speculative for me in my first years. The book, much of what they wrote in the book was speculative. Some of the promises were speculative. We have now track record. We have a long track record. They didn't have a lot of track record when they wrote the book. We have a long track record that shows, you know what, Bill? You guys, when you wrote the book, you were extremely prescient because most of what you saw came true. Everything you saw came true. Much of it was speculative for you guys. We know it. We know it because we got now long history behind us. Now, I'm going to talk about things I know because the fear of something is always greater than the reality of something. And when I'm outside of the umbrella of God's grace, I don't care what it is. When I'm walking with my hand in the big hand, it's easy when it ain't you. When it ain't you, it's easy to say, girl, just trust God. He got this. Let it be you on the chopping block. Man, it's heavy. So I'm not making light of that. But what I am saying is that still doesn't dispel the fact that God got me. God got me. Burning the consciousness of every man, woman, job or no job, wife or no wife, husband or no husband. Husband or no husband. He got you. Clean house, trust God. You know, so this deal about, so we ask ourselves, why do we have a fear? Wasn't it because self-reliance failed us? Why do I have a fear of a failed relationship? Because self-reliance failed me. Me relying on me can't make a person like me the way I want them to like me. Me relying on me can't make you love me back. Me relying on me can't make me, I can't make you stay with me when you don't want to stay with me. Me relying on me. So then we ask ourselves, what would God have me to be? What would he have me to be? He would have me to be honest. He would have me to be upright. He would have me to have integrity. He would have me to be responsible. He would have me to let you be who you gonna be and let me be on. Okay, it's okay to grieve it. It's okay. But I'm here to tell you, 31 years, I done been through that. I done been through failed relationships. And the fear of it is going to far exceed the reality of it. You know, I sat outside, and with my wife and I, we have been together 20 years. And I always wanted a nuclear family. And we lost our house at the same time. She had to go somewhere and find somewhere to stay. I had to go over to my boy Strange's house. She went over to her sister's house. We had a daughter. My daughter had godparents that are hell of a godparents. Had her own room. And I remember when I dropped her off at that house,
probably the hardest day of my recovery. I sat in my car outside her godparents' house, and I cried. I couldn't drive. I couldn't breathe. And I cried, and I sobbed, and I breathed, and I drove the car, and I went to a meeting the next day. And I cried, and I sobbed, and I got in the car, and I went to a meeting the day after that. And then I kept going to meetings, and I didn't isolate, and I didn't give up on the deal, and I can't run out of God, and God did what it is that He does, and I have an experience that lets me stand up with you in front of you and say, I don't care about the fear of it, but what about if the reality of it happened? You can walk through that, and here's the deal. Not only will you walk through it, there'll come a day when you'll be smiling on the other end. I always think, what is the worst thing that can happen to me? What if the worst thing happens to me that can happen to me? We got a model that we can look at. The worst day of Bill Wilson's recovery, he was trying this thing on. Didn't know if it would work. Didn't know. It wasn't no millions of meetings yet. It wasn't no millions of people staying sober yet. In fact, it was him. Nobody else stayed sober. And he got on this and he got sent out of town. And if he had if this business deal had been successful, he would have made a lot of money. A lot of money. And if that business deal had been successful, and if he had made a lot of money, I wouldn't know Terry, and I wouldn't know Leslie, and I wouldn't know John, and I wouldn't know Kathy, and we wouldn't know each other. And maybe, just maybe, there would have been an Alcoholics Anonymous that sprung up at a different way at a different time. But probably all the things that went into place for all of us to be sitting here this morning would not have. The worst day of his life to that point. Worst day of his life. Best day of our life. So when I look at that for my instruction for my worst day, I always know, God, I know you know better than me, and I know you see around corners, and I don't. So I'm going to take my little thing right here, right now, and I'm going to feel it, because I can't help but feel it. I'm a person. I'm putting extras on it, probably, because there's probably some people outside of it that's probably thinking, and don't even let me go there, but there's some people, you know, I might be putting even some extras on it, but okay. But God, I trust that you got me. I got on my knees, and I gave myself over to you. I'm not doing it gracefully. I'm not doing it the way that maybe I think other people look like they do it. I'm doing it hurting, and I'm doing it snotting, and I'm doing it all I'm doing it. But I'm going to do it under the umbrella of you. And I'm going to trust that you're going to know better for me than I know for myself. Now, I'm not sharing that as advice for you. I'm sharing that as my experience on when I hit those places. That's what I do. I don't deny what I'm feeling. I feel what I'm feeling. I share what I'm feeling. That's what we're doing here. We share what we're feeling. I share my fears, and I write my fears on paper. That's what he would have me to be, turn my attention. And then I keep it pushing. Because I'm going to tell you something, in 31 years, it ain't been nothing to stop me yet. And I've had a lot on my resume that have been hard pages. And I let God keep writing the chapter. Some of the pages I don't like. Okay. When life feels boring, what do you look at and what do you do differently? Life very seldom feels boring to me. But it has felt boring before. Early in recovery, I've done some stupid stuff when life felt boring. That falls under the umbrella of 6 and 7. Early guy, when life gets boring, I know it doesn't happen for anybody else in the room. Get out the phone, start calling, go over there, lay down, realize as soon as it's constant, this wasn't a good idea, and I ain't trying to go that no more. So I grow through that phase of how to handle boredom, you know. So now when life feels boring, I guess, why doesn't life feel boring to you, Ralph White? Part of it is I'm situated in a way that I'm grateful for, and not everybody is. I recognize that. I get to go a lot of places, and I get to do a lot of traveling. And I recognize not everybody. But one of the things that keeps stuff fresh for me is I'm a participating member. I'm a participating member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm an active participant in my own recovery. And if you actively sponsoring, actively being sponsored, active in a home group, active with people. Now, if I'm one of the people that's on the outskirts looking at the other people that's playing the game, then I'm going to probably be bored. But if I'm active, then I'm also active, till my kids were grown, and even now, I'm active in their life. I'm an active father. I'm an active grandfather. I'm an active son. I got a mom that I stay with. She's 88 years old. It's me and her. And my mom is still extremely active. Mama, where do you need to go? I take her places and I go get her. I'm active in my life. I'm active in recovery. I'm active, with most of the things I do. I never share what other people need to be. I can only share my experience of what it is that I do. But the word is enthusiasm and activity. Enthusiastically active. Not just activity, but active. Enthusiastically. And that's what I do. There's a couple of really quick ones. I can't stay long because we got to run. I'm with somebody who's also very active, and they got a home group meeting today that I'm going to with her, and so we're going to be running out of here pretty quickly. What does prayer meditation routine look like? I'm not big on that. I got a sponsor here right now. Tarek is a guy. He inspires me with his routine more than I am with mine, and I look for different things. One of the things that I look for in prayer meditation is not limited. Now, we have instructions in the big book for a prayer meditation for our step 11, but one of the instructions says look other places, especially for meditation. God, I'm a guy, as far as my meditation life, I'm a praying guy. I pray all the time. Prayer for me is talking to God. But meditation is another. That one is a place that I look for different ideas. Well, for me, what I've landed on is guided meditation. That works for me. And if you have phones these days, everybody does, it's a wealth of places you can go. And you can look up on, you can go on YouTube, you can find 12-step guided meditation. You can put your headphones in while you're still laying down or when you get up in the morning. And I like guided meditation. That works for me. Many other people have different things. Find your niche. Find what works for you. That's a very interesting area, that step right there, to find out what works for you. Listen. Seek it. Ask questions of them. Be inquisitive about what it is that works for you. I've heard the process to change the being, in quotes, is different from the 12 steps. Could you elaborate? Somebody's going to get mad at me because I'm going to just give a short answer. No, I can't elaborate because I don't know the process to change the being is different from the 12 steps. The 12 steps, I'm in a 12-step program, and all that I know that has worked for me, that has changed me, I don't change myself, that has changed me, has been this process you guys introduced me to, that has introduced me to a power that's changed me. I don't know anything else. So I know that there are other places that other people go. My mom has been changed in church. You guys know many people who have, and many of you may have. So I don't know. There are people who probably have been changed. And all I can share is this guy's experience. And what I can also share is that in Alcoholics Anonymous, that's all we have. We don't have chanting. We don't have transcendent. People in Alcoholics Anonymous have that. But Alcoholics Anonymous has 12 steps. That's what we have. That's what I have. And that's been sufficient for me. I want to thank you guys for the opportunity.